In-depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Usable news and information for your job. And now, here's Francis Rose.
Welcome to the program for Thursday, November 4th, 2010, on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. What will your agency look like in the next 2 years? The Executive Leadership Conference in Williamsburg taking up that question last week. And we'll listen in on a conversation to that effect in hour number two of the program today. The first hour, as it is every Thursday, is taken up with some industry chatter. And my guest today is Raymond Roberts. He's the Chief Executive Officer of Citizen. And thank you for braving the rain and being here today. It's great to talk to you in person.
Thanks a lot, Francis. Thanks for being here.
Happy to have you. Your company, let's start with the elevator speech about what your company does to give everybody an idea.
Sure. We're a professional technical services firm, and we specialize in information technology services to the federal government of the United States.
Mm-hmm. What areas in particular do you focus on? IT is a pretty broad swath.
Right, yeah. So our core corporate capabilities are in the area of anything from enterprise architecture down to application development and build.
Mm-hmm.
And we do business transformation services in between. So architect it, move the customer to a new environment, new platform, new rules, and then, of course, try to build the systems.
Now, as far as the application development goes, you're in an interesting situation because you do both from scratch mm-hmm. and also do COTS and modifications.
Sure.
So talk about the trends that you've seen as far as what agencies are looking for. I'm hearing more that agencies are at least willing to consider something off the shelf, maybe with some modifications. Is that holding up, do you think?
The promise of COTS is there. There's an opportunity to take something that's already built and customize it to your agency's requirements.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a developing library of tools and applications out there that the government can start to look at.
Mm-hmm.
That wasn't the case 15 years ago, but it's starting to become the case. And they've migrated from the commercial world into the requirements for the government.
Mm-hmm.
Not everything's going to fit, but certainly things like HR systems are fantastic candidates for COTS mm-hmm. applications, case management systems.
The advantages are pretty obvious, sure. I think. What are some of the disadvantages, or what are some of the things that you couldn't do COTS with, and maybe why they don't work?
There's going to be very specific agency mission requirements that nobody out in the marketplace addresses because there's no commercial reason to address them. But there's very specific things that certain agencies do, specifically the ones we deal with,
mm-hmm.
that are unique. Nobody in the world really does this kind of stuff. So you, at that point, really want to start considering a custom application build and design at that
mm-hmm.
point. But still, even elements of those, you can purchase and buy elements of a big COTS solutions and just weave those in, just mm-hmm. sew them into the fabric of an application.
That's interesting because that, well, first of all, the mentality of the agencies for the past, ever since the computer age began, has been we need to do this thing so we'll start completely from no code and move up.
Right.
And it's that's starting to change. How far along in that process do you think we are where people are thinking, we don't need to necessarily do it from scratch. It's an option, but mm-hmm. but there might be something out there that we can work with.
I think it's moving. The government's not an early adopter, and for good reasons.
Mm-hmm.
It's taxpayer dollars. They need to rely on practices and techniques and designs that are traditional and that people can really hang their hat on.
Mm-hmm.
What's the story? What was that saying? Is you can't get fired from buying from IBM?
Right? That's right.
So
that's right.
Even today, that still applies to some extent, but there are pockets of early adopters that need new technology and better solutions, so
mm-hmm.
they're starting to move towards that.
Yeah. What's been the driver for that? Has it been primarily cost, or are there other elements that are pushing that?
Cost is a driver. Predictability in the outcome of the application, I think, is another driver. You already know you have a tried and true module that you can sew in, and you know that whatever goes in, the output is going to be consistent. It's
mm-hmm.
you're not at the whim of a programmer anymore.
Yeah.
You've already got something that's been, heavily tested. Testing, the expenses and the costs around testing, it's virtually impossible to perfectly test an application and find every bug. It's almost impossible.
Mm-hmm.
But these COTS solutions have really been tested by a wide base of users. They've been beta tested and alpha tested, and they've been in production in other organizations. So yeah. Big benefit.
And the high risk list is full of projects where they push the button, yeah. they thought it was done, and it doesn't
right.
do, and something and then, garbage comes out.
And then you hear the horror stories
yeah.
on the other side, right, where big enterprise applications have been built using COTS. And what happens is it never gets done. Mm-hmm. It's just massive, and the customization that's required in order to meet the agency's requirements is so dramatic that you might as well have built it from scratch.
Mm-hmm. If I am sitting at an agency and I'm trying to figure out which direction to go in, what are the deciding factors going to be for me?
Between COTS and application bills?
Yeah.
I think the uniqueness of your mission is going to drive some of those elements. If you're in the national security, intelligence community, law enforcement community, that is a very unique mission. You're going to have to think about some of the things that your agency does that nobody else does, mm-hmm. and that's likely going to be a candidate for custom design, custom build, custom architecture. You have to consider where you are currently as an agency with the infrastructure that you've got in place. You can't go out and buy SAP if you don't have the right infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
So there's going to be those initial investments that have to be made. So it might not even be worth it. You might just say, hey, I can custom build this thing right now, and it's going to be cheaper if I just do it on my existing environment.
Mm-hmm. What is driving the main areas of technology that agencies are trying to work with? Is it just cost? Are agencies really focused on, I mean, we're going to talk about program management and performance later on in the program. Mm-hmm. Is that what they're telling you I care most about right now? Is it a combination of that? Is it other things?
The last 2 years, I've seen a shift in the last 2 years in government procurement, and that shift, I've heard of it from many other executives at other organizations, the shift towards cost and the cost constraints that they are facing has been a major factor.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen more awards go to low bidders than ever. Even though they're saying it's best value, it's still the lowest bidder. And cost has been a major factor in procurements and awards in the last couple of years. I think the economy's had a big, has a lot to do with that. Long term, of course, we're going to have the ups and downs of the economy. Long term, I think that they're going to have to shift towards sort of lower cost of overall maintenance for these systems.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to have to rely on outside parties to do upgrades to their systems. They can't rely on themselves to do the it's not a core business of the government, right?
Yeah.
Information technology. So the vendors want to do software as a service, software as a solution. They want to do these things. That's the way that's the direction that they're pushing. It's the innovation that's in the market. And I think that eventually agencies are going to go more and more with these kinds of solutions.
Your answer there kind of tipped where I was going to go next, and that is how are agencies doing at considering lifecycle costs and not just the upfront buy-in cost initially?
Yeah, I mean, it depends at what level that you're dealing with in the agency. Certainly the CIO and the budget office and the strategic planning folks are thinking about these things 5 and 10 years out.
Mm-hmm.
They're looking at mission and strategic plans very, very carefully. They're looking at their total cost of ownership, and they're looking at a Congress that has been issuing continuing resolutions for I don't know how many years now. I've lost count.
It's been a while.
And so you've got these organizations that are looking at last year's budget, which is the same budget as it was 4 or 5 years ago, and so they have to consider this. The cost of IT is not getting any cheaper. It's getting more expensive to do this. Some elements are going down. The cost of data storage is getting cheaper and cheaper. I mean, that's always been the trend. But building these systems and also the user expectation of what a computer system looks like, an application looks like today is very different than it was 5 years ago.
You're talking about on the performance end, not just
on the look and feel. Just the aesthetic appearance of it. I had a customer literally say to us in a kickoff meeting, I want the Star Trek Enterprise interface.
Wow.
It's a noble pursuit, but it's not realistic.
Yeah.
And yet our expectations are pretty high. I mean, just look at the younger generation all using iPads and iTouches. They have a huge expectations of what computer systems look like.
Well, it's the same conversation that we have whenever we talk about the usability of federal websites. The citizen, the taxpayer expects the same experience on the federal website that they get from Amazon and eBay and Travelocity or wherever else.
Yeah.
So it's the same concept. Raymond Roberts is Chief Executive Officer of Citizen, my guest on Industry Chatter on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We're going to talk about performance management and program management when we come back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
The
latest from the Federal Security Spotlight brought to you by Cisco.
The private sector doesn't always get what it needs from the federal government in terms of cybersecurity. Here's Dave Powner, Director of Information Technology Management Issues at the Government Accountability Office.
The private sector wasn't as pleased with the government as the government is with the private sector. What they told us is that they weren't always getting actionable threat information and alerts. At times, they had multiple organizations to go to, and they didn't see that single source.
To hear the entire show, log on to federalnewsradio.com. Will the top-of-mind security issues of today be the issues facing government tomorrow? Get the latest from federal experts on FISMA reform, the cyber initiative, how government is combating botnets, spyware, and other cyber evils, and more. Listen to Federal Security Spotlight, sponsored by Cisco, airing Thursday from 10 a.m. to 10:30 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m. or on demand at federalnewsradio.com. The Federal Security Spotlight is brought to you by Cisco, the leader in federal IT security.
And now, the Federal Living Report, brought to you by WEPA.
It could be the federal government's very first classified telework center. The Defense Information Systems Agency is making a huge move to Fort Meade from Virginia. To keep just a few feds on the job, DISA's Jack Pinkoski says they'll open the classified telework center around December 1st near Woodbridge, Virginia. He says that's how agencies should work, find ways to help the workforce and the organization, then just do it. I'm Amy Morris.
Will you be receiving a 25% life insurance premium refund check from your insurance company? WEPA policyholders will be receiving over $6 million this fall. In fact, since 1996, WEPA has returned over $52 million in premium refunds. In comparison, Fegley has never issued a premium refund. Besides a long history of refunds, WEPA offers significantly lower premium rates than Fegley. Visit WAEPA.org to learn all about the advantages of life insurance from WEPA. Again, that's WAEPA.org.
The Pentagon and Beyond, brought to you by Arinc.
Al-Qaeda's affiliate in Iraq is promising more attacks after 58 people were killed in an attack on a church this week. The Islamic State of Iraq launched an attack on a Catholic church during Mass in downtown Baghdad last Sunday, saying its deadline for the Coptic church, which allegedly is holding women hostage for converting to Islam, was missed. The attack was the deadliest ever recorded against Christians, whose numbers have diminished since the U.S. invasion in 2003. I'm J.J. Green.
Can you imagine being responsible for the electronic security of up to 1 billion barrels of emergency crude oil stored in salt caverns as deep as 4,000 feet? Arinc can. Their advanced information management platform protects over $80 billion worth of crude oil for the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. This stockpile is so important to our national security that there's only one person in the world who can authorize its drawdown. For more information, log on to arinc.com.
What's the buzz in the federal community? Chris Dorbeck knows it. Join Chris for the Dorbeck Insider weekday afternoons 3 to 7 on Federal News Radio AM. Chris has the insights on who's coming and who's going, new memos, new contracts, fun and helpful ways for federal managers to improve agency productivity while meeting mission goals. The Dorbeck Insider, building federal community by connecting people. Weekday afternoons on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Raymond Roberts, the CEO of Citizen, is my guest. And we talked before the break a little bit about program management and your company involved with that. There are two prongs, I think, to the project program management challenge that agencies have. One of them is complying with all of the guidance and regulations and so on and so forth. The other is making sure the project actually does what the requirements originally required the project to do. They're two separate and distinct things, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. They are. A set of requirements is different than legislation.
Mm-hmm. Talk about the difference and the way that you have to approach a project and consider both of those elements, because you can get to the end of a project and be okay with one. You can be compliant with regs or what guidance or whatever, and the thing still doesn't work right necessarily.
Right.
Or you can have a project that works and functions well and doesn't meet whatever rules it is supposed to.
Absolutely. So, you know, just taking a look at basic enterprise architecture requirements are something as simple and as well known and understood as Section 508 compliance.
Mm-hmm.
So that has to be incorporated in every computer system, every website, anything that is touched and felt by the citizen and certainly by government employees who use those systems. Those requirements have become standardized. Some of those requirements have been standardized, those legislative requirements. And you're right. You can build a system that's perfectly 508 compliant that is...
Doesn't do anything.
Doesn't really do anything. Mm-hmm. That's the same as anywhere else. And for the program managers who are overseeing these programs to make sure that their requirements, the actual business requirements from the user community are A, well identified, B, well understood, documented. We've got the right target as is architecture laid out, and to actually design a computer system that meets those business requirements is a different story than the legislative requirements. And so they've got a hard job. They've got to map those two on top of each other, and they've got to keep track of both of them. And I think that that's accomplished by a team of people.
Mm-hmm.
I think that you let the technical people, the program management people, and the architecture people, and obviously the governance and executives, have to be involved in every layer of that program to make sure that all of those requirements, be they legislative or technical, are met.
How does that line of communication work? How well does it work at most agencies? And is that part of your role to facilitate that too?
It is. I was just having the conversation this morning with a project kickoff that we did at one of the agencies yesterday. And I mentioned to the division director, I said, you know, that it's our job to make sure that these guys get excited about this, that they recognize that all of these requirements have to be met. And it's our job, even though we're not technically the program manager. We have a project management role, but we're not the program manager.
Mm-hmm.
And we're the builder. We're gonna do the build. We have to work with them. We have to be a partner with the agency. It's essential that we partner with them as though we're all on the same team.
Mm-hmm. Let's step back one, because you mentioned requirements, and that's been doomsday for some of these projects that we see. I refer again to the high-risk list, and mm-hmm. you can probably pick out half or more of them
sure.
and go right back to the very beginning as to where these things went awry.
Yeah, they fall apart. What I've noticed in 25 years of being in this business is programs and projects of all nature, whether they be commercial or government IT, fall apart on two things. They fall apart on program management. The managers fall apart on this. They just don't do what needs to be done, or they don't anticipate it. They don't plan properly.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, the requirements gathering process. It's the misunderstanding of the English language.
Mm-hmm.
If we're going to build stuff using the English language, the nuances of what the spoken and written word are, it can be interpreted so many different ways. And I've watched as people have walked through very clearly written requirements and reinterpreted them to mean something else.
Mm-hmm.
Like they are practically legal documents,
mm-hmm.
and they have to be written in a very specific way.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a big job, hard to do, and you've got to get people that really understand the technical interpretation of business requirements. You have to have great business analysts who get what the customer's mission is, who get what the business processes are, who've confirmed that all, and then you have to start prototyping. And I think that's why some of the new techniques that are out there, agile and, you know, prototyping, you know, build it quickly, look at it, test it, and then keep expanding. Do we have the idea? Did we capture the essence of these requirements and then move that forward?
Mm-hmm.
That's why some of these methodologies have come out.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's easier to get through cycles today to build and see if you've got the requirements right. But then again, project management, program management, and getting the right definition of those requirements is essential. Otherwise, programs fail. And there's a ton of examples.
Yeah. Are those methodologies making a difference, do you think? You mentioned Agile and some of the others. Mm-hmm. Are they making a difference as to how these things get done?
I think with the real experts, yeah, they are.
Mm-hmm.
You're always going to get a pocket of hyper-capable people who understand those methodologies and can drag a user through the process.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've got those folks, you're going to do well. But if you've got folks that read the book yesterday, maybe not so much.
But are they getting done then because of the methodologies? Are they getting done because you're working with really skilled people?
Yeah, really skilled people.
Yeah.
It's all about people.
Yeah. So it's not necessarily the methodologies help, but it's really having good people.
Having a framework is essential, but you're right. It's all about the people.
All right. Let's talk about that more when we come back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Raymond Roberts, the Chief Executive Officer of Citizen, my guest, on In Depth with Francis Rose. We'll be right back.
I'm Chris Maurer, CNBC Business Radio. We've got a rally going on a day after the Fed announced a $600 billion program to buy government bonds. The idea is to try to stimulate the economy. The Dow's up 187 points, the Nasdaq higher by 33. The Labor Department says first-time applications for unemployment rose last week by 20,000 to 457,000. The increase comes after claims fell in four of the previous 5 weeks. Productive output rose a stronger than expected 1.9%. That led to a surprise dip in unit labor costs. And President Obama now says he's open to the idea of discussing an extension of the Bush tax cuts, and that means for all income levels. Prior to the elections, the only tax break deal on the table was for middle-class Americans. However, spokesman Robert Gibbs says the president still doesn't think extending them to the wealthy is a good idea. Chris Maurer, CNBC.
There's no guarantee your teenager won't dye her hair purple. No guarantee it won't rain on your next vacation. In a world that gives you so many reasons to lose sleep at night, consider an investment that won't. With municipal bonds insured by Assured Guarantee, every dime of your principal and interest is guaranteed. Assured Guarantee is the global leader in bond insurance, with the financial strength and risk management skills to stand behind every bond we insure. Talk to your financial advisor or visit thinkassuredguarantee.com.
With Ally Bank's 24/7 live customer care, you can speak with a real person, not a machine, anytime you want. So if you need to know the latest and greatest interest rate at 1 p.m. or check your account balance at 4 a.m., it's no problem. Just press 0, and you'll be connected to a knowledgeable customer care associate who will help answer your questions. Plus, we post our wait times right on our website, so not a moment of your time is wasted. Now, when it comes to banking, who wouldn't love that? To learn more, visit allybank.com or call us anytime at 877-247-2559. Member FDIC.
HalfPriceDC.com. Half-price gift certificates to the area's best restaurants, spas, and more.
This week, buy half-price gift certificates to Tequila Grande of Vienna. Good-tasting Mexican food that's fresh, flavorful, original, and pure. Chef Prakash guarantees that.
And Casa Rico's in Frederick, bringing you new, exciting, and authentic preparations from Mexico since 1987. That's 23 years on the Golden Mile.
See all the offers at halfpricedc.com.
WashingtonCaps.com is the destination for behind-the-scenes coverage of your Washington Capitals. Get the latest news, stats, schedules, analysis, and info about your favorite Caps players. Explore Caps 365, the multimedia section where you can access podcasts, exclusive player interviews, live pregame shows, video highlights, and much more. Check it all out on WashingtonCaps.com. Red is Caps hockey.
Check it out, it's the Terminator. Hey, when'd you get back, huh?
Did you have to shoot anyone?
Why are you so distant? Are you not happy to see me?
So what's the deal? You gonna get a job now or what?
Why are you being so jumpy? Put all that stuff behind you, okay?
No one knows what it's like to come back from Iraq or Afghanistan unless they were there. Join other veterans at communityofveterans.org because we know where you're coming from. Brought to you by Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America and the Ad Council.
Congratulations on landing the job. I'm really excited for you.
Thanks. How's your search going?
The job market's tight. I mean, I can barely get an interview. Yeah. And I've got student loans to deal with. You're lucky, you know. The National Guard paid your loans off.
Luck? The Guard was a smart decision, one you can still make.
The National Guard Student Loan Repayment Program can pay up to $50,000 of your existing student loans. Get the details at NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the D.C. National Guard, aired by the Maryland, D.C. Delaware Broadcasters Association and this station.
The case is about a medical doctor betraying the public and taxpayers with health care, immigration, and tax fraud. For over 5 years, this doctor submitted false claims to Medicare about patient x-rays.
If the charge was for 4 x-rays, he would do one, and it would be substandard quality.
Special Agent Sandra Berchtold of FBI Detroit.
He was lying on the immigration forms of people who were trying to come into the United States to be naturalized.
And underreporting income on federal tax returns. The subject was sentenced to
24 months in custody, followed by 3 years supervised release.
Forfeiture of interest in cash and property valued at about $4 million or more, plus has to pay back Medicare and the IRS. The U.S. Attorney's Office, Eastern District of Michigan, prosecuted other agencies on the case.
The Internal Revenue Service, criminal Criminal Investigation Division, the Immigration and Customs Enforcement, as well as the Department of Health and Human Services Office of Inspector General.
I'm Denise Ballou of the Bureau on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
With the health care bill signed into law, how will patients and doctors translate the bill's intentions into real cost savings? How will the adoption of new technology streamline and maximize health outcomes? Join Afcea Bethesda and Michael Carlton from HHS for a discussion of health IT, touching on the latest issues, including health information exchanges, clinical decision support tools, and privacy and information security at Afcea's Bethesda November 5th breakfast at the Bethesda North Marriott. For more information and to register, visit afceabethesda.com/NOVbreakfast.
Are you on Facebook? Do you Twitter? So does Federal News Radio. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/FedNewsRadio or join the Federal News Radio Facebook group. For the latest in federal news and government contracting, visit our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest is Raymond Roberts. He is the Chief Executive Officer of Citizen, and they do a lot of program management issues, solving challenges for agencies. And one of the elements of that that I think is the most interesting is we mentioned agile development, and there are a number of other tools that you can use, and there are procedures and regulations and all that. What it boils down to, as you were saying before the break, is what's between the ears. And if we step back and look at what tools the agencies have brain power wise, mm-hmm. what's there now, what's coming in, and what's going out, are you optimistic or pessimistic about where we're headed when it comes to dealing with some of these program management issues based on what's available?
I'm optimistic. I believe that it's going to get better. I tend to believe that. I think that there's a lot of pressure out there, especially within the vendor markets, to make sure, and it's highly competitive, to make sure that they develop what these agencies need.
Mm-hmm.
It's got to get easier. They've got to make it easier. There's no capital in making it harder.
Mm-hmm. The workforce changes in the government as the workforce gets younger. We've been expecting a retirement wave for the last 30 years. Well, that's the thing. I was teasing Mike Causey about that the other day because I pulled out an old column of his from the Post from about 20 years ago writing about this. And I said, I wonder how many people have signed up for the government and then retired since you wrote this column. And we had a good laugh about that. Yeah. But there is this, Ron Sanders from, who used to be at ODNI called it a trough, where in the mid 90s, there was kind of a real slow hiring pace. Right. And so we have a concentration of baby boomers, maybe my parents' age or a little bit younger, and a concentration of people that are like my brother's age or a little younger, and in between in our demographic, not nearly as many.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the people who are most, or theoretically would be most conversant in the kinds of technologies that agencies would be needing or wanting. Maybe they don't know it right now. So I guess this kind of ties together the program management and the requirements end of it as far as when we go back and think about what agencies have between the ears, are they able to make good judgments about what they need to write the requirements well to then manage the programs well?
I think that's why they rely on vendors so much on the IT side. I think that they're looking at vendors to try to help them interpret what their requirements are. I was at a meeting yesterday with one of our very important customers, and it was great to see who was in the room because on the program side, not on the IT side, on the program side, you had the veterans, the people that had been there at that agency 20 plus years, knew where all the bodies were buried, knew exactly how the business ran, and in most cases were part of the solution, right? In most cases, their activities, their daily activities are part of the solution. They want to improve the environment. They know what's going on. But the IT folks that you looked at, you're right, they were all younger than you and I.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I looked at the room, I was wondering, you know, where's the connection?
Mm-hmm.
Even socially, where's the connection between these folks? You've got somebody that's 55 years old that's talking to a 30-year-old, you know, that conversation is going to be different. It just will be.
Yep.
And so I think that they're relying on vendors to try to bridge some of that gap. A lot of the folks that did retire from the federal government have ended up over at vendors.
Mm-hmm.
We've got one of the chief architects, formerly from HUD and Treasury, working for us. We've got somebody that was from a government procurement agency working for us. We've got several former military lieutenant colonels working for us. So they're coming into the vendor community, and when they go back to serve the agency, they create that bridge, I think, within the organization. Again, it's all a big partnership. If it works well, it's a big partnership, and it can work.
Yeah, it has to work in many cases. I mean, that's been kind of a challenge, is to try to mash all these pieces together and all these different styles and demographics and so on to try to get them to produce the end product, which is going to execute whatever the mission of the agency is. That's something that we talked about during one of the commercial breaks that I think is fascinating too, because you and I have talked a lot about the building of the project. And I wonder if sometimes we don't lose sight of the fact that the building of the project and the completion of the project and the checking off of all the compliance boxes isn't the whole point. The whole point is to create something that's going to be a tool for somebody who doesn't necessarily have anything to do with the IT shop to actually meet the mission of the agency.
Absolutely. The people that are the program sponsors ultimately that are delivering whatever the service is to the citizen or the warfighter are the folks that are using this stuff. And they probably don't have a whole lot of interest as to whether it was done in Agile or Java or, you know, whatever technology or methodology. They don't care. They just want to have a system that they can use.
They just care that this thing blows that thing up.
Well, yeah, on the military
or whatever
side,
it's supposed to do. Yeah,
absolutely. They want it to be accurate and they want it to be usable.
Do we do a good enough job in government, do you think, of connecting all of those pieces? We've talked a little bit about inside the management of the project, but what about then being able to hand it to somebody and have them actually use it?
When you think of the size of what they're trying to achieve, I mean, there's nothing bigger than the federal government of the United States, right? It's the largest, you know, organization in the world. And when you think about the fact that stuff gets done to begin with, it's amazing. And so there's a lot of really good people managing at the executive level that are managing and trying to put these pieces together. There's certainly pockets of incredible leadership where folks are coming in and they're inspiring their team. I saw it yesterday. I saw it 3 days ago with another customer where you've got a customer executive leader who's coming in and just charging up the team, telling them what they need to get done, and is going to take the time to monitor and make sure that the performance of that project goes well and that all of those things are tied together, that at the end of the day, that the mission of their agency, bureau, department, whatever it is being met by the folks that are serving that mission. And, you know, an operator out in the field on the military side isn't going to get 1 ounce of consideration in this other than that's the end user. That's the one that benefits from the correct information or the system.
Yeah.
But they're not necessarily going to have input into it, and they're not going to manage that process. So there's really good executives on both sides, government and vendor side, that try to get these done. So there's obviously evidence that some things don't work, projects fall apart. But all of this, all of IT, I've always likened it. It's all R&D. None of this is ever – whatever system you're building, it probably hasn't been built before.
Yeah. And something – I don't know if you can speak to this or not, but I think we get hung up too because we're so involved with government. I'm watching it and you're inside it and working with the agencies. And I think we lose sight of the fact that not every IT project in the private sector goes absolutely smooth as silk. They just don't necessarily have the newspapers and radio stations and TV stations chasing them and 535 people on Capitol Hill watching them, too.
I did commercial IT for probably half of my career, mainly telecom and insurance and financial. And I can tell you that the failure rate is just as dramatic on their side. These technologies are difficult. Again, everything's R&D. It's likely that piece of code has never been written before. Sure, I mean, we can get down to, you know, there's only 5 routines that are ever built. You know, get the data, change the data, store the data. Sure, we can get into that. But most of these things are R&D functions. And you have to have a tremendous amount of vision and foresight and patience to get through the cycles of errors that are going to obviously creep up, and you have to manage that process. And there's tons of failures. I remember insurance companies scrapping entire systems. I built the first 1-800 number system for AT&T up in Canada, along with a very talented group of people. I was part of that group. It was amazing. We got it done in a short order of time, and we got it right.
Mm.
It was unbelievable. Why? Because we copied the U.S. system. That's why we got it right. We copied the elements of it, but there were other examples of many failed applications.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same in the commercial world as it is in the government, except it's just not as transparent.
Yeah, and I think we lose sight of that because of the transparency factor. Raymond Roberts is Chief Executive Officer of Citizen, my guest for the hour on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We'll be back in a moment.
FLIR Systems has a singular focus on providing thermal imaging night vision systems for search and rescue, surveillance, and force protection across the globe. We proudly support the men and women who serve, defend, and protect by providing leading-edge technology to enhance mission success. Today, customers trust in FLIR Systems' thermal imaging products and rely on our responsive support worldwide. Visit FLIR.com/GS for more details. FLIR Systems, extraordinary vision for extraordinary heroes.
Here's Michael Byrne, Geographic Information Officer for the FCC, from the panel discussion on Big Data, the Art of Advanced Analytics.
We need to really think about the design function to be at nanoscale across all data sets. So it's inordinately precise spatially, inordinately precise temporally, or at least allow the flexibility for that to happen, because no matter what product we start looking at, the first thing I always hear is, oh, that's a great data set, could it do this? And that next this is always at least the next scale up, either spatially or temporally.
To hear this show in its entirety, go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword Booz Allen.
While knowledge discovery within the cloud is immensely powerful, big data is more than just a discussion of technology. It's a discussion of what can be accomplished when massive data and cloud efficiencies combine to make advanced analysis and innovation possible. Booz Allen Hamilton has been at the forefront in understanding, developing, adapting, and upgrading effective tools and processes so government agencies can use this technology effectively and efficiently. Booz Allen is ready for what's next. Learn more at boozallen.com/expertvoices.
Newsmakers, talk to Jason Miller.
Federal News Radio's Jason Miller spoke with Federal Chief Information Officer Vivek Kundra at the Executive Leadership Conference in Williamsburg, Virginia.
The challenge moving forward is going to be for us to think about and parse through how do you differentiate between data sets that are going to actually drive economic value and innovation versus data sets for accountability versus data sets that are going to allow breakthroughs to happen.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive. Federal news and information just got more fun and interesting. Amy Morris joins Tom Temin on the Federal Drive, weekday mornings from 6 to 10. Tom and Amy tailor their show for Feds on the Go with usable information from trustworthy and seasoned journalists. You're going to learn, but they also might make you laugh. The Federal Drive with Tom Temin and Amy Morris, 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Raymond Roberts, the Chief Executive Officer of Citizen, is my guest for the hour. And we've been talking a lot about program management and end users and requirements and on and on. What's the hardest part right now about doing business with the government? Not necessarily the RFP process or all of that stuff, but just more conceptually than detail-wise.
This is happening right now because we're doing our annual budgeting for 2011-2012, mm-hmm. and what we're learning is the lesson of two things. Continuing resolutions. The effect of continuing resolutions on government procurement cycles. So when we used to just shift everything to the right, the start dates, here's the award date, here's the start date, let's just shift that 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're going, okay, take that 2 months and add another 3 to 4 months onto it.
Yeah.
Because the procurement cycles are not what people say they are anymore. There used to be, maybe more than 5 years ago, there was at least some level of consistency to the prediction of when something was going to get released, when it was going to be awarded, and what the start dates were going to be.
Mm-hmm.
That's no longer the case.
Yeah.
It's a whole new world. The last 2 years, it's a very new world. So that has caused a lot of people some angst because they're not getting the awards on time. And if you're not getting the awards on time, your budget goes out the window. And if your budget's going up, what's happening to cash flow? And it becomes a financing situation at that point, because when are these projects going to start? When are we going to start getting payment for this? So that's a business issue.
Mm-hmm.
The other side of this thing is protests. Protests are becoming more and more widely used, and I'm getting more concerned about the effect of protests on our business. It's an impediment. It's a block to getting both sides of that equation. Is the agency is hurt, and certainly the incumbent contractor, the awarded contractor, is hurt by those protests. Many of which, it doesn't change the outcome.
Right.
It's not going to change the outcome. It's just somebody protesting because they're upset.
Mm-hmm.
There are certainly many cases when a protest is valid. There's a good reason for it. It's through our legal system. It does have its place, but I'm just starting to see more and more of these protests popping up. I read somewhere 17% increase in protests. I think I read it off your website, actually.
Could be, yeah.
And I'm not surprised by that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not surprised that there's that kind of an increase. Of course, there's more procurement going on, so of course there'll be more protests, but I'm not sure who's benefiting from all these protests, but I know that this is an impediment. It's harder to do business because of that.
What's a good model, though, for separating out the ones that aren't really appropriate and still allowing the ones that, at least where there is some question, to be able to go through and be examined?
You know,
I mean, who decides which is which?
I mean, you look at, well, the OMB does, right?
Well,
the agency,
I know, but
the agency and the OMB does, right? And then the lawyers do.
But what kind of a filter can we apply to... Because every vendor tells me exactly the same thing.
It's the constitutional right?
Yeah.
You get your day in court.
Yeah.
And the lawyer on both sides, whoever the attorneys are on both sides, are going to tell both sides that they both have a case and they both have a shot at winning this thing. And so everybody's encouraged to proceed.
Mm-hmm.
Defense and the accused and the people that want to just file the protest to begin with. I wish it was clearer than there's a smoking gun.
Mm-hmm.
But it never is. I wish it was clearer than an outright violation of procurement integrity, an outright violation or a fault on the FAR. I wish it was, but it never is. And I've seen some downright, questionable protesting. And I think it harms the industry. I think it really harms the industry. And I think it's ultimately a disservice to the taxpayer,
yeah,
the citizen.
I don't think anybody disagrees with you. I think the challenge is how you apply some kind of a filter that's still fair where a protest is appropriate and presents some kind of consequences for somebody or deterrent to keep people from bringing protests that are a little more frivolous.
I love the rule that's out there in some states and certainly certain jurisdictions, and this is outside of the federal government agency, is that if you initiate civil action and you lose, you get to pay for everybody's costs.
Pay for everybody.
So I think you better be right,
mm-hmm,
right? I think that would be a deterrent.
Have you seen that, though, become a deterrent to people who may have a case and may not be able to afford to pursue it?
You know, I'll tell you, I've seen several times where we've looked at a decision that was made where we thought, well, you know, this is protestable, you know, this was done incorrectly. And whether we had the cash or not, whether we had the financial means to go and pursue it or not, we just decided it's not worth it because, mm-hmm, you're harming the agency.
Yeah.
And so we did one and only one protest ever in our history, and I will never do one again. there's no way. And even though we won it,
uh-huh,
and we won the appeal and we won it twice, I won't do that again because I saw what it did to the agency. So I'm just never going to do one again. We've just got a standing rule now.
When we come back from the break, I want to talk a little bit more about the financial end. You mentioned the continuing resolution problems and the costs that are involved there, and I'd like to talk about that a little bit to wrap up on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My guest is Raymond Roberts, Chief Executive Officer of Citizen, on In Depth with Francis Rose. We'll be back in a moment.
You hear the sounds of hammers and saws, but it's also the sound of freedom and independence. Across America, people are supporting Homes for Our Troops build specially adapted homes for our severely injured veterans. Now, it's your turn to help Sergeant Stephen Kiernan, who lost both legs while serving in Iraq. He volunteered to protect our freedom. You can volunteer your time, donate materials, or make a cash donation to this effort. Visit homesforourtroops.org or call 866-7-TROOPS.
If I could have a heart-to-heart with my dad.
If I could have a heart-to-heart with my mom.
I'd probably talk about girls.
We'd probably talk about girls.
Anything. Boys, school, clothes.
You'd be amazed at what they'll talk about if you give them the chance.
If I had a heart-to-heart with my dad.
If it were real heart-to-heart, I'd tell my parents what I'm going through.
I'd probably talk to them about growing up.
I'd probably tell my dad that I wish we'd do more stuff together.
I don't think it has to be a heart-to-heart. I just want to talk.
Give your family everything. Give them your time. From the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series, Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power, Grantham University, and Dell. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m. right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
Why does a waiting room have to feel like a waiting room? And does a stress test have to be so stressful? At Kaiser Permanente, we don't think it does, and we've made the changes to prove it. With brand new state-of-the-art facilities opening all around the Mid-Atlantic, like the Kaiser Permanente Capitol Hill Medical Center, we're poised to become the leader in healthcare for the D.C. and Baltimore area. With easier access to primary and specialty care, full-service radiology, lab tests, and pharmacy services, we're offering more choices than ever before. Our staff of top-notch physicians is growing by more than 200, providing greater access to care. And our innovative electronic medical records allow members to view their own medical history 24/7. Plus, members can email their doctor's office, check most lab results, refill prescriptions, and even choose their primary care and OBGYN, all online. The future in healthier care is already here. Find it at kp.org/midatlantic. Kaiser Permanente. Thrive.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
Plan now to attend Affirm's breakfast briefing on government innovators, Catalysts for Change. It features our very own Francis Rose Thursday, November 18th at the Washington Court Hotel in downtown D.C. You'll dialogue with speakers as Affirm explores how newly emerging technologies are transforming government. Register today for a timely and informative discussion. Go to Affirm.org to register. That's Affirm.org.
Back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Raymond Roberts of Citizen, my guest. And we could just do a whole nother hour, I think.
I think so.
We could just keep going on and on. I do have some highlights from an event at the Executive Leadership Conference in Williamsburg last week. A group of officials talking about the second half of President Obama's term and what it will look like from inside government. And you'll hear that in hour number two of the program. Just a few minutes left, Raymond, to talk about some of the money things that you mentioned in the last segment, the effect that continuing resolutions have on the agencies. If you had a chance to sit down with an appropriator or something on the Hill and say, look, bud, here are the problems that these repeated CRs cause in the agencies, not just from my perspective as a vendor, but also from the agency's perspectives. This is how you're holding up the missions of the agencies. What would that list look like?
All the way from program inception, strategic planning. I mean, all the way from the start, the folks that are doing the strategic planning of the agencies. If they don't know where the funding's coming from, they don't know how they're going to get the money, they're going to start planning less and less. They're going to start providing fewer and fewer services. And then the impact into the procurement shop, where you've got a thinly operated procurement shop. These folks are working very hard to try to get a complicated job done against a set of federal acquisition regulations that's a mile thick, and trying to apply the procurement methods and technologies that they uniquely understand, that individual. And then all of a sudden, there's this crushing amount, because you've got this very compressed buying period and procurement period. You have this crushing load of work to do. And what happens is these contracting officers and procurement specialists, they get crushed by this amount of work.
Mm-hmm.
And then the vendors end up suffering because of this. Programs don't get released on time. They get delayed. We're noticing delay after delay after delay. These folks can't keep up with the workload. And it has a lot to do with this sort of, it just becomes a wave, a very short wave of procurement. There's like the buying season has gotten really short now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that continuing resolutions have had a lot to do with that.
We only have about a minute left. Mm-hmm. I want to go back to compliance for just a moment.
Sure.
I'm looking at our website right now, and the top story on federalnewsradio.com is headlined, President Challenges Cabinet to Make Government Work Better. Had a cabinet meeting this morning in the wake of the elections on Tuesday. Mm-hmm. And the story here says, President Obama has instructed his cabinet to make a sincere and consistent effort to change how Washington works. And it's talking about making sure that government's working efficiently and cost effectively. That to most people, I think, says that equals more regulations, more memos, more this. Are we getting to a point where we're almost complianted out, where there's so much to do that we're spending more time being compliant than meeting missions?
You're right. We're off priority. There's a few priorities. I mean, the federal government, your government's only supposed to have certain priorities. It's not supposed to be all the priorities of a nation or its people. It's supposed to be around, you know, the benefit to the people of the United States or whatever country it applies to. And I think that we've allowed ourselves and special interest groups to initiate too many priorities. It's very difficult. I manage an organization. I know what priority creep looks like. I know what it looks like to have 1,000 priorities on your desk. And, you know, someone once said priorities are like arms. If you have more than just a couple of them, you're probably lying to yourself.
Yeah.
You know, you really only have a couple priorities to focus on. And you can break that down per agency, per department, per even program. But the plethora, the enormous load of priorities on the federal government, I think makes it virtually impossible. But, you know, it's government by the people.
It is what it is. That's exactly right. A terrific hour, and I appreciate you being here today.
Thanks,
and I hope you stay dry getting back to the office.
Certainly, yeah.
Raymond Roberts is Chief Executive Officer of Citizen, my guest on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Later on this hour, you can find my conversation with Raymond archived at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. And back for hour number two, we'll take you back to the Executive Leadership Conference in Williamsburg in just a few minutes.